Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on episode 59, The Lost Tribes of Israel. Previously, on The Fan of History, the Assyrian king Shalmaneser V conquered Israel. What will he do with it? Dan, can you answer this question?
Yes, I can. But first, the king of the week, we already mentioned him, it's Shalmaneser V, the king of the Neo-Assyrian Empire and of Babylonia as King Ulullayu. We also should mention Ahaz, the very diplomatic king of Judah, who is surviving all of this destruction by being a pro-Assyrian kiss-ass king of Judah. So he's just, whoa, Assyria, you are so great. Oh, good that you took care of the evil guys in Samaria. And he probably doesn't like the Israelites in Samaria because they used to fight him. So
right.
We are standing in the ruins of Samaria. The conquest is total. Shalmaneser V and the Assyrian army has taken all of Israel. It's gone. It will take 2,700 years for Israel to return. And what do the Assyrians do with conquered people? What's the Assyrian policy for conquered peoples that could cause trouble?
Well, usually you kill them all.
Oh, yeah, that's very rare, actually.
Oh.
Very rare. It's okay. Only Ashurnasirpal II.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of...
People want to imitate him.
Right. I'm thinking of our previous conversations. But
that would be an easy solution to the mystery of the 10 tribes, right. The lost tribes of Israel. They were all slaughtered by Assyrians. But they weren't. So well, what do they do then?
Take them as slaves.
Not very often, though. We will talk about, when we get to the 7th century BC, we'll do some episodes on Assyrian society. Because there are slaves, of course. There are slaves in all ancient societies, but they are not as numerous as, for example, in ancient Rome. So taking people as slaves are not very interesting. The Assyrians want to make everybody an Assyrian and grow the empire. So the policy here is an old one. It has probably been around since even the Middle Assyrian Empire. Deportations. You take some troublemakers from one end of the empire, you move them to the border at the other end of the empire, and then the enemy will identify them as Assyrians and they will have to fight for Assyria to survive. So there are massive deportations of the Israelites. And this is where we will deal with the lost tribes. I hate the way that Sargon II creeps into these episodes. Sargon II will take over this podcast entirely. This will become the Sargon II show for at least 10 episodes. Very soon. And he is trying to steal all the glory from Shalmaneser V. We talked about this in last episode. And he, even in his steles, he talks about all the people he deported from Israel. But it was probably done by Shalmaneser V. There could have been a second wave of deportations by Sargon II. But we'll talk about that in future episode. But these people that were deported from Israel, they are the lost tribes of Israel. Of the original 12 tribes, only the tribes of Judah and Benjamin remain under King Ahaz in Judah. Being pro-Assyrian, they survive them. There are also members of the Levi and the remnant of the Simeon tribe in the southern kingdom. So they kind of survive as well, but the bulk of Levi and Simeon are in Samaria or in Israel. And if you Google the lost tribes of Israel, you will find 1,000 crazy theories. Yeah, do it. It's incredibly interesting.
Oh, I have seen a lot. There have been shows and books and everything.
Do you remember any crazy theory?
That there's supposedly a lost tribe that are Ethiopians.
Okay.
Like, there's a... They found this one actual tribe of people who worship similarly to old Judaism without actually being exact. And they were thinking that they were one of the original
tribes. There are Jews in Ethiopia, yes.
So, yep. That's one of them. I can't think of any of the crazier ones offhand. I'm sure you have a list.
I just went to the musical Book of Mormon, which was translated to Swedish as the first translation language, which was very random. So they set it up in Stockholm. And when I came out from the musical, which was great, there were Mormons out there. And they were giving people the Book of Mormon, saying that now you've seen the musical, now read the book.
Uh-huh.
And I was so convinced that the Nephites, the Jews that appear in the U.S. in the Book of Mormon, that they were deported. They were from this. They were among the lost tribes, but they actually left later.
Huh. Okay.
So, yeah. But one theory is they are in the Americas, and in some theories they are still lost and will come back someday. God knows from where. From space, perhaps.
They were taken up to another dimension, Dan.
So for entertainment, go check out the crazy theories on the internet about the lost tribes. But we will now solve this by looking at the sources. What can serious history tell us? And since the birth of the nation of Samaria, of Israel, in 884, with Omri as the king, the Old Testament is a fairly good source, a surprisingly good source. We have been surprised constantly since the 19th century when we started to discover the Assyrian sources, how well they play with the Old Testament. And 2 Kings 17:6 says that the lost tribes were sent to Assyria, and the Assyrians settled them in Hala and Habor, the river of Gozan, and the cities of Madai. And this is like, what? Where did they go? Hala, Habor, the river of Gozan, and the cities of Madai. So let's look at these places. Habor and the river of Gozan, this is pretty clear. It means the region of the upper Habor River near modern Kabul, on which stood the cities of Gusanu. Today it's Tel Halaf. And this is in North Syria. So here we have it in the Bible itself, saying that some people went to Habor, the river of Gozan. The cities of Madai is probably Media. And we know the Medians quite well, right? Remember Assyria versus the Medes?
Yep, the Medes. Oh, yes.
So this is the border region in the Zagros Mountains in what is today Iran. This is a traditional problem area of Assyria. And this is a typical place where the Assyrians would deport hostile people. So put them on the Median border. So then when the Medians show up to fight, they will have to fight these Hebrews from Samaria and not Assyrians. and they will blame, the Medians will consider the Samarians as Assyrians. So, yeah, two flies with one stone. this will not stop the Medians, because the Medes will still have their time in the sun, as anybody who has read ahead knows. And now we will get to cover that as well when we go past 71 BC. The last place mentioned in Kings then is Hala. This is less clear. There is a place called Halahu in the Assyrian inscriptions. This is located to the east of the Tigris in the general area of Erbil and Kirkuk in Iraq. And it's a pretty good candidate. But if the lost tribes are deported into the empire, which seems natural, there should be evidence of Hebrews in Assyria, right? Let's look for such evidence. There is the post-biblical book of Tobit. This is a piece of literature that describes the adventure of a Jew deported from Israel by Shalmaneser V to Nineveh. And this guy has trading relations with other Hebrews in Media. We find a lot of evidence of presence of Hebrews in Assyria. There are, from this date on, Hebrew names occurring in Assyrian sources, in Assyrian letters, and they have not appeared to this extent before 725 BC. There is a prominent guy called Halbishu, who is labeled as a man of Samaria. And he's mentioned in a letter written from Gusanu, right? The place where we thought they were deported.
Exactly.
And it was found in the ruins of Nineveh. There is a script from Kala in Aramaic. Remember, Aramaic is taking over as the language, as the written language, because it's super easy, as the spoken language, because it's super easy to speak. And now people are using Phoenician letters to write Aramaic, which is much easier than writing Assyrian in cuneiform. And in this script from Kala, written in Aramaic, there is a guy called Menachem ben Elisha. Pretty Hebrew name.
Yeah, I was about to say. Menachem. Yeah.
Josephus himself, the famous historian from Roman-occupied Israel, says that the majority of the 10 tribes elected to stay beyond the Euphrates when in the 5th century Israel made known to them Artaxerxes' decree regarding their return to Jerusalem. Because the use of Jerusalem will be captured by the Babylonians in the 6th century. And then they get to return to Israel and to Jerusalem. But some of them decided to stay. And in reality, there is no reason to think that the majority of Jews who remained in the East did other than gradually assimilate to the local population. The Assyrian Empire is notoriously good at assimilating people. I love the immigrant policy of the Assyrian Empire. It's like, aggressively go out and take people and make them immigrants in your country. And then give them opportunity to become Assyrians. So assimilation is a part of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And they really love it when people come to the empire. And like, can we stay in the empire? Of course you can. You just have to protect this border from the Medians.
Right. All you gotta do is defend it with your life. That's all we ask.
Oh, you also have to go on this yearly campaign, and you have to worship Asher, the god of war. But you can also worship some other gods, because they are also aspects of Asher, so that's okay. So I think it's pretty clear what's happened to the lost tribes. They eventually became assimilated into the Assyrian Empire. But if we take so many Hebrews out of Samaria, out of Israel, we need to move somebody in to make up this new Assyrian province that will not rebel. Keep your fingers crossed.
Right. Good luck.
And we have evidence of this from the Old Testament itself in 2 Kings 17:24. It says that the king of Assyria settled deportees from Babylonia and Syria in Samaria and other cities of Israel. And we will find out why in upcoming episodes. Why are there people that are treated as hostiles in Babylonia and in Syria? But we will see why very soon. So after this massive importation of people into Samaria, you would have a nice mixed population that has to be obedient to the Assyrian king. And today, now I'm going to get controversial here, but if you look at the people who are not Hebrews in Israel today, this is one of the places they came from. There are other sources of non-Hebrew people in Israel as well. But this is definitely one of the sources. It was deportees from Babylonia and Syria. And Sargon II will, of course, claim that he did this. It wasn't Shalmaneser V, and this time he might be right, because moving people into Samaria would naturally occur after moving people out. And we are very close to Sargon II now. Sargon claims that he removed 27,280 Israelites from Samaria to Assyria in 722 BC. And this could have happened in 720 BC. And in that case, it was Sargon II who made some sort of second wave of deportations. So then we have the question, then, what do we do with this pretty powerful kingdom, now an Assyrian province? It's centrally located in a troubled area. If you control Israel, you control the path to Egypt. You get access to the Mediterranean, which they already had, then the Assyrians in Phoenicia. But you don't have to deal with Phoenicians. Sargon II will claim that he rebuilt and enlarged Samaria. He brought in people from conquered territories.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So then we have to look at archaeology. And if you, there has been excavations at Samaria, at the old capital of Israel, and there are clear signs that there were Assyrian destruction by Assyrians in the 8th century BC. We have zero, none whatsoever, Assyrian buildings from this time in Samaria. And we think that's because they were all destroyed during the Hellenistic period. But it's troubling that we can't find a single Assyrian building. So what do we make these forced immigrants do then in Israel? Well, they bring their gods. And the Assyrians are okay with gods, as I said. Right. Because they are all aspects of Asher. And then you get this nice mixed polytheistic religion that the Assyrians like. So we could assume that the Assyrians are behind this, that they encourage people to build temples in Samaria and stop the return of monotheism, if there indeed was a strong monotheistic church in Samaria at the time. Of course, not every single Hebrew was deported, but we know that the Hebrews that remained, they will, against the teachings of strict Yahvism, then install statues of alien gods in Samaria. And when Sargon II later has to deal with the rebellion in Samaria, he mentions the gods in whom they trusted when he crushes the rebellion.
Yeah.
So now Samaria is nicely polytheistic the way the Assyrians like it. And one of the gods that Sargon II takes in this later rebellion is Nergal, which is the city god of Cutha from Babylonia, clearly showing them the presence of defeated Babylonians in Samaria. These are, remember in the New Testament, you have the tale of the Good Samaritan?
Yes.
Yes. So that's probably refers to people from this era as well, or people who originated in this era as immigrants by Assyrian power. And I think the religious pollution of Israel, this polytheism, then symbolizes perhaps more than anything else the final fall of ancient Israel and a material threat to neighboring Judah, because Judah is still worshipping Yahweh as their main god or as their only god, still very controversial. We have some more archaeology here. The original capital of Israel, the capital that Omri started Israel in, was Tirsa. And in Tirsa, we can find level 2 destroyed by fire at this very time. 6 miles southeast of Samaria, Shechem, level 3 is destroyed by fire at this time. Tirsa and Shechem probably fell to Assyria before Samaria did, because Samaria held out for 3 years, and these smaller towns could not. Further north, at Hazor, we have the destruction of level 5, attributed to Shalmaneser V. Level 6, immediately afterwards, have crude buildings, probably built by surviving Israelites. And level 3 has a massive Assyrian fortress. So we couldn't find Assyrian buildings in Samaria itself, but here we have a big one. And then something happens. In 722 BC, in the middle of this handling of the remains of Israel, Shalmaneser V mysteriously dies.
Mysteriously? I assume you did that with air quotes?
No, we don't know anything. We don't usually get any information when Assyrian kings die. That's about to change, because we are, for the late Assyrian kings, we are getting this information. But remember, we don't know how Shalmaneser III died. We don't know how Ashurbanipal II died. So Shalmaneser V just dies. And then a new guy takes the throne. And it's Sargon II. So now he starts taking over the show. I will not talk that much about him here, because I will spend a full episode talking about the start of Sargon's reign. But I still have to talk about him because he's so awesome. There was, of course, before the Assyrian Empire, the first Assyrian Empire, there was Sargon the Great of Akkad, the great ruler of the Akkadian Empire, the first builder of an empire in world history. And the Assyrians love to claim this guy as an Assyrian. Nobody really knows where Akkad was. And it's very likely that Akkad was somewhere pretty close to the Assyrian heartland. So the Assyrians shamelessly claim Sargon the Great. This is in 2000. It's before 2000 BC. But they're like, he was an Assyrian. So most people think that Sargon II, because this guy is pretty famous, calls himself Sargon II because of Sargon the Great of Akkad. But that's not true, because there is a king, a very, very early king of Assyria called Sargon I. He ruled Assyria from 1920 BC to 1881 BC for 39 glorious years. And the only thing we know about Sargon I is that he refortified the ancient capital of Assyria, Ashur. But we think there is a big reason why Sargon II claims this name as the king, because Sargon means Sarakuni. It means the true king, or the king is legitimate. And when you take a name like that, it probably means that you are not legitimate.
I get the distinct impression that history is repeating itself Even today. Wonder.
It is.
Wonder what's going on.
I remember the line of the ancient kings of Assyria was so long. And we think, we talked about this on this podcast, that Tiglath-Pileser III usurped the true line of Assyrian kings and took it over, setting a dangerous precedent. And now Sargon does the same. We will talk more about this in an upcoming episode. But I believe that Sargon II, no matter what he says, because he says a lot of stuff, that he is just a usurper, that rebels against Shalmaneser V and possibly kills him. He will claim to be the son of Tiglath-Pileser III, just like Tiglath-Pileser III claimed to be the son of Adad-Nirari III. And maybe I should leave Sargon II here, but he will do so many things. So just a small trailer for what you will experience now in the podcast. We will get a full battle description. Remember, the Assyrians never speak about what they actually do on the field of battle, but Sargon II will do that. He will describe his fantastic battle tactics. He will also be killed in action, something that hasn't happened for 1,000 years. We will encounter an enemy that could kill an Assyrian king. Nobody has ever succeeded in this. The Assyrian king is always there. He's right. Always in the front line of battle, or possibly hiding at the very back of the battle. But he never dies in battle. And Sargon will very epically die in combat. So he will take over this show for many episodes. The 710s will be all about Sargon II. And one reason I love Sargon II is that he has these colorful enemies. He has 3 supervillains as his enemies. And in 722 BC, one of them rises to power. We mentioned him before. He encountered Tiglath-Pileser III and yielded to him immediately. It's Merodach Baladan, a Chaldean prince of the Bithya kin. And while the Assyrians are distracted with Sargon's rise to power, Merodach Baladan seizes the kingship of Babylonia. He comes out of the sea land of the Chaldean heartland and takes all of Babylonia. And Merodach Baladan is incredible. He is the very best at surviving Assyrian attacks. And this is, of course, his biblical name, because he's a prominent figure in the Old Testament as Merodach Baladan. His real name as king is probably Marduk Apla Idina II. He's also referred to as Marduk Baladan, Baladan, or Berodach Baladan. But he will prove to be one of the greatest arch enemies of Assyria ever, and one of the best kings of Babylonia. So Merodach Baladan, remember his name, because he will be putting his finger in the eye of Sargon II all the time.
So if we were making action figures and we had Sargon II, we're definitely making one of Merodach Baladan?
Yes.
Awesome.
And there will be at least 2 more action figures from the Sargon show.
Yes.
And one of them being King Midas himself.
King Midas?
King Midas.
He had a superpower.
He did. We'll talk all about that. There will probably be an episode of this show named King Midas. Let's go back to Judah then. Ahaz, sitting there being pro-Assyrian in Jerusalem, he's a vassal of Assyria. There are Assyrian provinces on 2 of his borders. Damascus is an Assyrian province. Samaria is an Assyrian province. On every other border, he has other vassals. Tyre is still under siege from the Assyrian army in the Phoenician area of Lebanon. So Judah is, if you think that the Assyrians will keep conquering stuff, Judah is very much next in line. So you can't, Ahaz survived this, but will Judah survive the future conquests of the Assyrians? So we had the Tyre being under siege, and in 720 BC, this siege ends. And it doesn't end in the same way as the siege of Samaria. Because King Luli is still the king of Tyre. Wow. I have no idea how he does this.
That's a feat.
He was besieged by Tiglath-Pileser III, and now he was besieged by some Assyrians. We don't know who, really. But he strikes a deal with Sargon and goes back to being an Assyrian vassal. How can they trust him? I have no idea. He's already revolted twice. And the Assyrians are not your not forgiving types.
Right. I was about to say, man, his pinky swears must be the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and he is not done revolting. He will revolt again against the Assyrians.
Wow.
So then we move all over the world back to China. China's almost left our story.
I was about to say, we haven't talked about China in forever.
No, we talked, the last time we really talked about China was when King Ping became the king of China.
Right.
The powerless puppet ruler of this new Eastern Zhou dynasty. And this was in 776 BC. And he has been the king. He was pretty young when he became king. He has been the king for 56 years. And in 720 BC, he dies. And we don't really know anything about what he did. He probably just sat around and took orders from powerful nobles.
Probably.
But he's still of this royal line that you have to pay homage to. He's succeeded by King Huan of the Eastern Zhou dynasty. King Ping has been ruling so long that his heir and son, King Chifu, has already died and never becomes the king. So he was just a prince, Chifu. So this King Huan is his grandson. And his given name was Lin, but he takes the throne as King Huan. And he also then has no real future. He is just the puppet ruler of the Eastern Zhou. And that's it.
That's all for this episode?
Yes. Well,
then next time, our next episode, we'll go to Greece. And we will talk about the epic Lelantine War.
Yes, there is a reason I don't talk immediately about Sargon II here, because we have to mention the Lelantine War. The Greeks themselves said that between the time of the Trojan War and the Peloponnesian War, there was only one war where all the Greeks were involved. And that was in the 8th century BC, in the Lelantine War. So we'll see what that is about.
I'm intrigued. All right, folks, please go to YouTube. Search up Fan of History. Like and share our videos. Also, give us a review on iTunes or any of your favorite podcasting mediums. And if there's one that we're not on, please give us let us know, and we'll try to get on there as well. Facebook.com/fanofhistory. Also, thefanofhistory.wordpress.com. Patreon.com/fanofhistory if you like what we're doing and you want to hear us continue doing it. Please consider supporting us. Want to follow Dan on Twitter and get all the updates for when the episodes go up? At Dan Horning. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Cerulean Says Hi. So, it looks like for this week, I am Brennan.
And I'm Dan.
And this has been The Fan of History.
We are!
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.